Hello, I'm Ranjay Gulati, and I'm this week's guest on Metapod.
This is Metapod, where we unpack the web's most interesting podcasts and the stories behind them.
Deep Purpose is a podcast that gets behind the minds of great leaders to understand what drives them and how they drive their organizations to great success.
Hello and welcome. This is Wendy, your host on Metapod. Thanks for tuning in for another episode about an interesting podcast out there you might not know about yet, or one you already know and love. If you know someone who likes to discover podcasts, let them know about Metapod. You can find us on the web at metapodshow.com. This week, my guest is someone who's been studying resilience within organizations to get at how organizations grow and prosper under both good and bad circumstances. That's Ranjay Gulati. He's a professor at Harvard Business School and an often cited academic when it comes to economics and business. Professor Gulati's podcast, Deep Purpose, is an extension of his work published earlier in a book with the same title. Deep Purpose examines how business leaders unlock the potential of their organizations and people. I'd like to say that Deep Purpose is one of the first business podcasts featured on Metapod, but as you'll hear us say, this is actually a podcast about people. Ranjay speaks to business leaders from across the globe about how they establish and infuse purpose into their work, communities, personal lives, and well-being. You don't need to be interested in business as you might ordinarily think of it to enjoy these conversations. Ranjay manages to move business leaders out of CEO mode and get to the more personal thoughts and feelings about their work and their organizations. You'll find some more information and links about Ranjay and his work at metapodshow.com. But first, here's the Metapod conversation about his podcast, Deep Purpose. Welcome to Metapod, Ranjay. Thank you for joining me to talk about your new podcast, Deep Purpose.
Thank you, Wendy. It's my pleasure to be here with you today.
Deep Purpose, the podcast, has its roots in a book, from what I understand, and the book has the same title. For those of us who are not familiar with your book, could you tell us about it briefly and also how it's related to the podcast?
The book and the podcast share some common themes. The original theme was really I was trying to understand how do organizations do great things and how do leaders do great things in organizations, what I called unlocking potential. And some organizations are able to do extraordinary things and for a long period of time. And in that exploration, I came to realize that some of them really leverage what came to be called deep purpose. They take an idea or an ideal called purpose. They not only turn it into a mission statement, but they really embed it into the DNA of the organization. It becomes a framework through which everything gets done. But as I unlocked it further or unpeeled it further, I came to realize purpose was not some organizational thing. It was the thing that leaders themselves apply to themselves and encourage others to apply to themselves. I looked at sports coaches, I looked at business organizations and other organizations, and great leadership was really putting purpose to work, really where individuals understood their own purpose and came to work and showed up in a different way. And suddenly I came to realize that purpose was this huge unlocked possibility that created possibility in which individuals transformed how they thought about work and also how they thought about themselves and also how they thought about their organizations.
I'm curious, are these special people or do you think that anyone can learn to think and act in ways with regard to purpose that are deep?
You know, purpose is one of those things that is so obvious and so easy at one level and yet so hard. At one level, you might say, come on, think about your purpose in life, you know, and we've heard that forever. And right. Two most important days in your life, the day you were born and the day you figured out why. But I at another level to actually step back and ask yourself that question, and then to try to align your life around that answer to that question is actually very hard. Mm-hmm. And so it's at one level very easy and very hard. At the organization level, it's also gotten politicized. This is woke capitalism or it's something else. And so the politicization of the word has also, unfortunately, caused more confusion around us.
Mm-hmm. As an expert on organizational leadership and strategy, what has been the most surprising discovery for you in creating this podcast?
You know, what has been really enlightening is every leader has a personal story. Mm-hmm. You know, leaders are not randomly just selected people. These people have come through extraordinary personal journeys to get to where they are. And it was really enlightening and inspiring for me to have them share their personal story. And so the podcast is as much an inquiry into them as it is into the organizations they lead. And you see the intersection that, you know, life and work is personal. This mm-hmm. idea that there is that work is something you do 9 to 5. It's not that they're workaholics, I want to clarify. Mm-hmm. But the way they do work, it connects deeply to who they are as people. And they have extraordinary stories from the slums of Soweto, you know, in a small place outside Detroit, to all over, really extraordinary people doing extraordinary things.
What do you think leaders have resisted sharing with you? Do you have a sense of that? Were there any topics or issues that you felt you needed to prod a little bit harder to get at something? In a good way, of course.
You know, when you ask leaders about their business and what's going on, you know, you go into the CEO mode. When you ask about purpose, I think purpose itself is a kind of a question that the inquiry of purpose naturally leads you to a different place. And so to me, it was a pleasant surprise and discovery that when you talk about purpose, people are willing to get personal very quickly.
Okay. What is the benefit in going deep on purpose or deep on social purpose in a business context? And I'm just, you know, sort of picking apart the title of your book and podcast here, I admit. Why go deep?
Wendy, that's a great question. And honestly, I was going to call the book Purpose. Somebody had told me that one word titles sell a lot of copies of the book. I couldn't. And the reason I couldn't was so many companies have a purpose, and they put it out there. They parade it. They wash themselves with it. It's a mission statement. It's nothing more than that. It's what I, in the book, ended up calling convenient purpose. And so just to distinguish that, you know, the companies that really benefit from purpose are the ones that go deep with purpose. Now, you also asked about the social aspects. The book is not about social purpose. The book is about really having a purpose. And remember, a business's purpose is making money also. Mm-hmm. That's the other hijack of purpose. His purpose is anything but profit. Okay. And that's not possible for a business itself, you know, for a conventional business. And so purpose is about goals. It's about intentions, but it's also about duties. It's about being able to blend all the different things you do in a kind of a coherent fashion. And the question of purpose forces you to think long term. When you imagine long term, it forces you to think about the different stakeholders you must serve in addition to shareholders. So I'm not neglecting shareholders. Even the phrase purpose and profit can be confusing because it implies purpose is separate from profit.
Right?
I actually like performance with purpose as a much more accurate phrase because it is saying that, you know what? Performance, purpose is integral to performance of all, on all dimensions, social and commercial performance.
And what are the risks of going deep on purpose? Can a company go too deep?
That's a great question. In one of my chapters, I talk about the messiness of purpose. And the messiness of purpose is that purpose forces you to confront trade-offs, which you have to make, like commercial goals and social goals, right? Mm-hmm. Commitments to my shareholders, but commitments to my employees and to the planet and my communities. What am I committed to? How do you make those trade-offs and choices? And purpose gives you kind of a frame. It doesn't answer the question. Nobody's going to help you answer the trade-off question. But it's going to give you a framework within which you can look at the question. I don't believe that there is some kind of negativity of going too far with your purpose.
Okay.
I think here's what you can do, which I think is a potential pitfall, is that periodically you need to do a refresh of your purpose. Mm-hmm. And if you take your purpose so as sacred that, you know, it can never be changed. You know, Kodak being in the film business, we make money selling film. You know, you or somehow that's woven into their purpose that, you know, we bring great things to life through our film. And understand, or Blockbuster saying we bring entertainment to your home through our stores. Sometimes you have to be willing to say it's time to look at our purpose in a new way. How do we modernize our purpose for the present times? So it's not just looking back, but also looking forward. So I would consider that as a potential kind of area that one should be cautious about.
Are there any good arguments for staying shallow, so to speak, not going too deep?
You know, some people find that purpose is a kind of a commitment. You know, you're putting an anchor down, and I don't want to do that. It ties me down. I want to, like, you know, and I think that's really, I don't think that's the right way to think about it. In turbulent times, you need North Stars. Ancient mariners, even in the times of, you know, really turbulent seas, needed a star to point to, saying, where are we headed? And remember, purpose is not rules. Purpose is like principles. It gives you an orienting framework. It's not telling you have to do this. It's not like the, you know, here are 10 things you got to do or 15 things you got to do or 20 things you got to do. If anything, I've heard that, you know, it's comforting and stabilizing to have that.
To come back to a word you used a few minutes ago, the politicization, yeah, too much politics coming into social issues, I suppose, or perhaps corporate social responsibility. You have an interview with a leader at Unilever. Forgive me for forgetting his name at the moment. And I think what struck me about his conversation was his talking about the future of work and really working with people's preferences and needs for flexibility. And I think it's an example of, you've just used the word messy there as well, where I think there's demand on the business side as well as the individual side to have something that together works. To come back to the, and they are making that work, it sounds like, but to come back to the political issue, I mean, are there situations, and I must admit I'm looking at the US from Europe, are there business situations where there is too much influence on an issue that impacts individuals or segments of society? And, you know, two examples I've come up with are abortion and firearms, and how those may enter any kind of business or corporate space, so to speak.
So you make an excellent point, Wendy. There was a time when businesses could sit on the sidelines of all social issues and say, that's not my purview. We're here to make money. We sell products and services. And, you know, why do you want me to weigh in on Black Lives Matter and abortion mm-hmm. issues and gun control issues? I mean, that's not my kind of thing, you know. I'm here selling soap and shampoo, right? And for the long, and only a few people would get involved and stake out, you know, mostly because a founder had a strong stance and didn't care of the consequences of it. I think today now, increasingly, society is putting business leaders in a corner and saying, not society, I would say employees, customers, communities. Mm-hmm. I mean, you look at what in Georgia, Delta Airlines had to take a position on election issues. They were like, you know, or in Florida, you know, Disney had to take a position on the issue. And, you know, you can see that across the board where that I employ or Spotify with Joe Rogan, you know?
Yeah.
So what is happening now is employees, communities, customer groups are more vocal in expecting companies to take a stance on issues that are broadly social and perhaps impact some employees and customers too. And I think this is a huge struggle for business leaders. They know that, and these are politically charged, divisive issues. We are in a divided world today. And they're like, you know, why do I have to get, I'm not going to please anybody, or somebody's going to be really unhappy no matter what I do. And I don't think there's an easy answer to this right now. I think we're all wading our way into it. Leaders are trying to dodge and say, I don't want to be involved in this issue, but they're getting pushback. Let me give you a very limited answer to this question, though. I discovered in one company where they have a very clearly stated purpose, and the purpose translates into three sets of social issues they want to be involved in. And there's, of course, the business side of it. And then they said, as part of our purpose, here are three social issues. And the CEO is very clear. I don't want to do any fourth or fifth issue. Mm-hmm. So please don't ask me. It doesn't fit into. There are many social issues out there. So his take is purpose creates some kind of guardrails for me.
Yeah.
Around this kind of endless, bottomless, every social issue is at my door, right? Because every employee in the company has some social issue they care about, and they have some kind of position on it, and they want me to line up with their position. And I'm like, you know what? So his take is purpose gives me guardrails, and it allows me to make demands of my stakeholders.
Right.
I'm sorry. That's not an issue we want to get involved in right now. But that's not an easy answer. That's not acceptable to many people today. In today's world, people are very emotionally charged about some issues. And we have more issues coming up right now, right? We have the Supreme Court weighing in the coming months. There are going to be some very, very strong issues. And so the question is, how do you decide whether to take a stance? And if that stance is taken, what that stance might be?
Yeah, sometimes it feels as though we're living in a moment where companies have the ability or can get more attention for caring about social values and issues more so than do governments.
Yeah, you know, customers do care about companies that stand for some social issues, some social causes, right? Even at Unilever, Alan Jope talks about that the brands that have a purpose were growing faster than the brands that didn't have a purpose. So that was one set of studies that he pointed to. But there's a lot of work on purpose branding these days that, you know, it's hot ticket. So companies talk a lot about how they, because what does it elicit in the customer? It elicits a sense of trust, a sense of caring, a sense of community minded, and hopefully that'll translate into better, nicer products, and that they're going to do good by me, right? I want to buy from you, and I want to be, and there's an affiliation effect also. So all that is, I think, is fair. I think the other part to your question is that in some instances, businesses are better positioned to do social things than governments. You know, they have resources, they have access, they have, you know, they are able to, you know, get things done. And I think we shouldn't forget that, you know, businesses, large ones in particular, but even smaller ones, you know, they have access into social systems that allows them in many ways to do something. I'm not saying they're going to replace government. This is an ongoing debate, right? That why government should, businesses should not poke their nose in social issues because that is the purview of the government. They're unelected officials. They're undemocratic. They're redistributing shareholder money to people they choose to give it to. That's not their money to give. Why are they doing it? Penalizing shareholders and doing anti-democratic things, even like undemocratic. So, but if they don't do some of those things, nobody's going to do them.
To bring up consumers for a moment, do you think there are changes that consumers would like from certain industries that maybe relieve them, the consumer, of a tough choice or a bad conscience? And I have a few examples. I mean, personally, I will say I work in the travel and tourism industry, and you know, there's a few things I've seen and I hear. One would probably be in the airlines, maybe consumers saying, just put the carbon offset in the fare so I don't have to think about it. It's there. I don't need to be bothered with the choice, and I don't have to face the shame involved with using this product at this moment in time, flying. I think another example might be tourism on the ground, companies choosing not to work with animals or work in certain communities where there may be a questionable, you know, balance of power or effect or impact on the community. And, you know, the company coming out and saying, we're not going to do that anymore as a matter of course. And it sort of leaves the consumer with this sense of relief, I think, that what they might purchase with that company just will line up with their social values. In your conversations with leaders, I mean, how much are they factoring in those sorts of subtle consumer desires? I mean, it seems pretty tricky.
You know, one of the key currencies in branding and products is trust.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Companies spend decades trying to earn customer trust, right? Johnson mm-hmm. & Johnson, I trust Johnson & Johnson, right? Or I trust XYZ. And being able to demonstrate that, you know, you are not a transaction, right? And I think in that frame, larger framework that, you know, we are not a transaction, trying to economize and optimize for you. So there's one, that's one side of the story. The other side of the story, though, however, on the other side is the pull saying that, you know, we are in an economic exchange and I want to find value for money. You know, mm-hmm. if I'm flying on an airline, I want the cheapest fare.
Right.
Oh, by the way, thank you for the free carbon offset. Right. And so I think this is a tension that exists in the framework of business
mm-hmm.
where we want transaction, but we also want relationship, right? We want good deals, but we also want good deeds. And I think it creates a challenge for companies, even like a Unilever, right? Or others. An airline might say, okay, I'll offer carbon offsets in the fare, but my fare is now 10% higher than others. And okay, I got some of the people who really care about that. But then I have others who are like saying, why would I pay 10% more?
Right.
I'm just going to go with the lowest fare. I think this is a real challenge for businesses. Some people try to do. That's why we end up with another thing, which is the win-win. Do good and do well. So I'm going to find ways to do good things that doesn't cost me any money. And that way I can do good and do well at the same time. So you see what I'm saying? It's this tension. It's not there's no easy answers. And there is plenty of work on purpose branding I mentioned to you earlier that suggests that, you know, there are definitely benefits of doing this, but then there are costs as well. And the question is, do the costs and benefits, how do they stack up in the world of hard commerce? And some companies take a principled stance. I mean, you look at Patagonia. Patagonia is an extreme example. I don't want to use it as mainstream, but you know, when you can charge $300 for your jacket, you can afford to, you know, you've carved out a niche for yourself as that company. And your pricing is also ultra premium. You're not saying I'm selling affordable jackets for the poor people.
Right.
So that is the way I think one would think about.
What's the most positive thing that you think people should know about the purpose-driven work of the leaders that you've spoken to so far?
You know, it's amazing. Purpose is an individual construct.
Mm-hmm.
It means doing something that is at once meaningful to the self and consequential to the world beyond the self. And purpose unlocks humanity in us. Purpose unlocks happiness. Purpose unlocks fulfillment. There's data showing that not only are people who are purposeful more productive at work and more loyal and committed and all that good stuff, but purpose has health outcomes.
Okay.
Longevity, health outcomes. Chronic inflammatory diseases, anger management, risk of stroke, heart disease. Purpose is good for you.
Okay.
So, like, forget going to the gym or, you know, getting your vitamins. You know, get to have a purpose.
You heard it here, Metapod listeners. Purpose is good for you.
So that's what I would have learned.
Okay, that's interesting. And what do you have coming up for listeners on the podcast?
You know, I deliberately went global on this podcast because I didn't want to interview almost none of the CEOs in this series are featured in my book.
Okay.
This was a post-book project to say I didn't capture everybody in this context and I didn't spend enough time probing their personal story.
Okay.
I wanted to know, who are these people? Why do they do it? Are they doing it for commercial pressure? It'll help our brand. It'll help our shareholders. Or we can do this, that, and the other. It's been so inspiring. You know, you're going to hear Sim Shabalala, the CEO of the largest bank in Africa, Standard Bank, right? You're going to hear from Dylan Pillay, CEO of Temasek, the sovereign wealth fund in Singapore. You're going to hear from Anand Mahindra. You're going to, in India, conglomerate CEO and chairman. You're going to hear from Wood Staton, the largest McDonald's franchisee in the world. You're going to hear from David Velez, the founder of the largest digital bank in the world. So you're going to hear from, and others. I haven't even spoken about others. Each of them brings their own kind of distinctive personal story about how did they get to be who they are in the first place? And why was this thing purpose so important to their own personal journey? And then how did it translate into what they do at work? And why has it been both fulfilling and highly profitable?
Meaning, your story included as well?
You're going to get trickles of my story in there as well.
Okay.
You're going to hear me talk a little bit about my purpose as well, because a few of them pushed back at me and said, Professor, what about you?
Very good.
And so you're going to get trickles of me in there as well.
Well, it's a great podcast that I've listened to, the episodes I listened to so far, and I think anyone can listen to it. You don't need to have an interest in business per se. I think that's the nice part about it. So,
thank you for that, Wendy. That was my goal. I didn't want this to be a business podcast. Mm. It's really a life podcast. Work happens to be part of life. And so it really is a life podcast about how we can think about ourselves, what we do at work, what we do outside work, and how all those things come together in some meaningful way.
Great. Well, Ranjay, it's been a real pleasure and privilege to talk to you about deep purpose. And thank you so much for sharing your insights from your work. And thank you for joining me on Metapod.
Thank you, Wendy. It's a pleasure to be here with you today.
Again, thank you to Ranjay for his time and willingness to field all of my questions related to the potential risks and challenges about going deep on your purpose as an organization. You'll find a link to one of the conversations we referred to here. That's with Unilever CEO Alan Jope. You'll hear Jope's ideas about how the workforce will be structured in the future and whether mayonnaise has a social purpose. So you can go to metapodshow.com for more info, and please share this episode on social media or directly with someone who might be interested. You can follow Metapod on Twitter at The Metapod Show and Facebook and Instagram at Metapod Show. As always, thanks for listening. See you.
That's all for this episode of Metapod. Thanks for listening. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at The Metapod Show and subscribe at any of the usual places you find your other favourite podcasts. You can follow Metapod on Instagram at Metapod Show or visit our website, metapodshow.com.
Aside from the theme tune, this episode of Metapod was made end-to-end by me, Wendy Morrill. Metapod intro and outro voiceovers by Zoe.